I've never had a number 3 in the German charts.
No.
Absolutely not. I think you've just provided the open. Oh, we don't like to be beside the seaside, especially when Brighton are stuffing us 3-0. Yes, our automatic promotion hopes, if they weren't already over after the defeat at Huddersfield, are dead as a doorknob after a comprehensive beating by the now second place Brighton. They were briefly leading, only to be thwarted by a rather comical goal from Newcastle. But anyway, we'll focus on the weekend's events and ask what next for Reading after they extended their run to just 1 win from 5. We'll look at whether there's any danger of the playoff bandwagon derailing and what's next for Stam and this squad. Hello and welcome to the Tyler Stem Podcast, episode number 120. We've got lots for you on the show this week. As mentioned, that Brighton game in full focus. We've also got a rare pub chat as we look at our Reading FC Academy 11s. We've got a few bits and pieces in news bites, and the mailbag throws up all sorts of questions. I think it's the biggest mailbag we've had all season, from Yapstam selections to Danny Williams, Tyler Blackett, all covered thanks to your suggestions and feedback. But anyway, joining me this week for this 120th show is Mr. Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, welcome back.
Good evening.
And making his reappearance on the show, he's probably not been on for the best part of 30 episodes now, it is Raw Hoops, Steve Curtis. Hello, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me back.
Nice to have you back. It's the first time you've been in this new studio, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Le Fondre was brought back. Yeah, the old analogy I used to.
Coming off the bench again, as I joked on the Facebook video, we've benched Mark this week. You know, he's had his moment in the sun. He's had his 2 weeks. Mm. And, you know, I'll probably try and get Johnny back at some point. He can come out of timeout.
Yeah, bring him back.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, thank you very much, gents, for joining us. So we've got lots to get to, so let's delve straight into that game at the Amex Stadium. Let's go to the recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
Okay, gents, so this clearly wasn't the result we were hoping for. Brighton 3, Reading 0. Now, a lot of us, well, pretty much all of us, in the Tyler Stem Prediction League, predicted doom and a defeat, but I don't think many were thinking we'd get quite such a comprehensive spanking, Dave. Did 3-0 flatter Brighton at all, or was it a fully deserved 3-0?
Do you know, it was one of those strange games where 3-0 on the balance of play did flatter, but on chances created, didn't. I did think that we probably did more than, well, we certainly did more than enough to notch. I think Roy Bearens had a particularly good chance, didn't he, in the first half, and certainly Dally Williams header that was cleared off the line by, was it Shane Duffy?
Yeah, in acrobatic style.
Yeah, which was slightly irritating. A minute later, they're 2-0 up. So it's a difficult one to analyse in many ways, because I thought that in general gameplay we were okay. Certainly no better or worse than we've played this season. But of course, you know, for the majority of this season. But of course, we're playing one of the best teams in the division. Well drilled, very solid, very compact, and certainly the closest thing that I think I've seen in this division since Steve Coppell, the closest thing to Steve Coppell's Reading, shall I say, I've seen in this division since Steve Coppell's reign as Reading manager.
Yeah, very, very well drilled side. Steve, all three goals coming on the counter attack as well. I mean, you can look at it two ways. You can either say, oh, well, at least Reading were pushing them, or you can also say, well, Brighton just laid a trap and we fell for it. Which do you think it was?
I think they definitely laid a trap. I mean, you know, we've been being hit on the counter all season, and Will analysed right at the start, before we'd even kicked off the season, he said that Reading throw a lot of men forward and they get caught on the counter, even in pre-season, and it's been happening all season, and Brighton knew exactly how to do it. I think that's why, as well, it's difficult to analyse, is because Reading had a lot of the possession and almost looked like they were on top, but Brighton were playing
just
into that.
The possession, though. I mean, obviously we've dominated possession in the vast majority of games we've played. It was the territory, and it was the ball in the right area. Yeah. It was in on that cusp of middle to final third. You know, we were trying to play in the right areas, and three times, or certainly the 2 second half goals came from when we lost the ball on the edge of the area. The first one was actually in our own half of all places.
Well, what is it? The second, I think, from the free kick, I think, went from the free kick to the back of the Reading net in about 20 seconds. Mm-hmm. Don't even know how that's possible, but it did. You look man for man, though, Dave. Is there a massive gap in individual quality between the two sides, or was it just a case of superior teamwork?
Superior teamwork. They've obviously got some very good players. Glenn Murray is a proven goal scorer at this level, and Anthony Knockhart, as much as you could question a lot of his gameplay, he is an exceptionally talented individual. They have some very, very capable defenders, some highly rated defenders, but their compact team unit, like I said before, is the closest thing to Steve Coppell's-Redden that I've seen. And Steve Coppell's-Redden didn't give a lot away. You know, they habitually conceded less than a goal a game. It was very difficult to play through, particularly when you're playing a pretty solid and rigid 4-4-2 that Brighton play, you know, with the two banks of four and hitting us on the break. Again, that's classic Reading under Steve Coppell. They're not Newcastle, are they,
where you sit there and go, this player's worth £15 million, of course he's going to be.
No, they're not. But you look at the players they've got wily characters. Mm. They've got players that are absolutely suited to, A, the style of play that they play, and B, the division. It is an attritional division, and they're not a rugged side, but they are very, very, very high intensity, and they mix it up extremely well. Horrible cliche. I hate that cliche. It's one of many cliches that I hate. but they do. They mix it up. And they vary their play, and they've got the players to do that.
I would very much encourage anyone to go out and read Valdemar Janáček's excellent match report, especially if you enjoy the word sea slugs.
it was a very good match report.
And he was talking about the difference between the two sides and pretty much hitting a lot of the notes you just hit, Dave, and talking about how Brighton knew what they were doing. And he picked up on the fact that Reading are too nice. They were too nice to take on a team like Brighton on their own turf. He's making the point of, you know, George Evans is a player, you know, you'd be happy to date your sister, but he's not going to intimidate you on in a top-of-the-table clash.
But at this stage of his development, how old is he? What, 21? He's not played a great deal of first-team football.
No.
Give him a couple of years in the first team and get some experience. There's no question.
Exactly.
This is the whole bigger piece thing that I was mentioning earlier.
Well, it's the difference, isn't it? They've got Steve Sidwell, who's been there and done it at every level, compared to, I said, George Evans, who's, you know, still in what is second ever championship season. So lots to do. Steve, I'll go back to the start of the game. Do you think Yapstam got his tactics right? There was a lot of question marks at left back. Paul McShane coming back from injury to go in the centre. But Tyler Blackett put out in left back. Now, I think personally, he's had a great run of form at centre back. So A, that was a problem seeing him shifted out of there. But B, it meant that Jordan Obita, who'd also had a good few weeks, was dropped as well. Were you happy with that move? Could you understand it?
I could understand it. I thought, personally, that the whole lineup was a little bit defensive. I think bringing in Camorgan, bringing in Evans, moving Blackett to left back and all those little changes, it felt a bit like he'd gone for a more defensive lineup. You can see why he did it, because you're away from home to team in the top two. But yeah, I actually think Blackett played very well at left back by the end of the game, you know, and so that looks like it was a decision that paid off.
Yeah, well, he was Valdemar's man of the match again. You can go check out his player ratings on thetarlestend.com. Dave, what about you? Selection-wise, did he get it right? One of the things that I was looking at was the front three. The front three looked very isolated throughout that game. I think if you look at the touches, I think Gareth McCleary had 23 in his 72 minutes. I think Kermigan ended up with 30 from 90 minutes as well.
McCleary's been very quiet the last two games. And I think there's a reason for that. It's simply because he's been targeted as the main danger man. Huddersfield isolated him. Brighton didn't give him any time, any space, and we didn't get the ball out to him anywhere near often enough. He's the main danger man in our setup. So there's your main reason why he was quiet. But Behrens was by far the more productive player.
He was.
He had the shot in the first half, which, on another day, goes through Stockdale's legs or sneaks in somehow, takes a deflection off the defender or what have you. And in the second half, I'm still going through my head, why the hell didn't Jordan Much just stick out a toe in the shot that trickled wide? If he wrong foot Stockdale if he does that, and it probably goes in.
Yeah.
So Behrens had by far his most productive game for a while, I thought.
People were calling, I know it's emotional straight after the game, but there were people texting into BBC Radio Berkshire saying it was gutless, it was embarrassing. Would you go as far to say that the performance warranted those sort of words?
No, it's not
gutless or embarrassing. I think it was more naive would be a better word to use.
Exactly.
I'm interested to know what you two think about this issue, because, again, for me, I look at that and I think Stam has gone out there hoping his side learn. He's obviously hoping for a result, but I think sticking to his plans, I hope he's hoping that the team develop, that they learn from games like that and learn how to overcome it. On the other hand, a lot of people are saying he needs to go to plan B for games like this. I know Ady Williams was particularly vocal about the style, saying, look, it's not working away from home. We're getting beaten by the best teams. Change something up. Where do you two fall on that side of the argument? Do you think that Stan...
Ady Williams is looking straight away at the game and the season in isolation. I'm with you in the first instance that he's... Yap Stam needs to learn. Let's not get away from that. He needs to be able... The amount of times that we end up with a gaping chasm between the back line, when we lose the ball on the edge of the area, the gaping chasm at the back line to the who was supposed to be the defensive midfielder. I think...
Are games like this vital for the learning process?
Yes, absolutely they are. These are the games... The games where you learn most are the ones where you lose.
Mm.
Plain and simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's all well and good when you've got it, you know, going your way and you're winning and you're winning and you're winning. But when you lose a game, and we ultimately we lost fairly comfortably. These are the games where you actually learn the most and where our players... Bearing in mind, at the end of that game, we had a 21-year-old midfielder, a 19-year-old midfielder, Liam Kelly. How old is he?
No, he's 21 or something, isn't he?
Yeah, 2021. We're less than 30 league games.
Exactly. So we've got two midfielders in there who are at the very start of their careers, still learning a hell of a lot. They've got experienced players around them, but those guys are in the centre of the park, and with Danny Williams in there as well, who's obviously an American international, very experienced. The midfield unit when we lose the ball is critical for me, because we do leave acres of space and expose that midfield.
And Steve mentioned Will's article at the very start of the season. He highlighted this from pre-season friendly. I think the AFC Wimbledon pre-season friendly. He highlighted. You can go check it out in the archives. He pointed out, he drew a massive, great big square and said, this is the site of gaps. And they're still doing that, especially sometimes away from home.
It's been happening all season. Yeah. You get the same instance with a ball cut back. The amount of goals that we've conceded from teams getting it out wide or putting it in, and there's been nobody from the back line who are on the six-yard line to the penalty spot to the edge of the area.
Mm.
And you know, you'd expect a midfielder or two in there, but they haven't, and teams have scored from it. It must have happened on half a dozen occasions at least this season.
I think it's worth remembering how inexperienced the majority of the Reading team is, but also the manager. You know, this is his first season as a first-team manager in the league. He's learning as much as his team is. So for things like that,
I think there is a question, though, to be answered here. Reading are in a fantastic position, fifth in the league, but they're not entirely secure of their playoff place. Is there that argument that Stam needs to put this learning experience on hold to be as pragmatic as you can to get a point, even if that means playing a bit more direct, being a bit more, you know, just completely changing up his style? Is there that argument when they go to Leeds, they go to Sheffield Wednesday, especially in a playoff game?
That's not his philosophy. We know it's not his philosophy. You know,
I agree.
Why would he change what's been successful? You know, it has been successful this season. We're off the back of a 3-0 defeat. But it's all very negative. But... why would he change his philosophy?
Because I suppose the argument goes, Dave, is because his philosophy is clearly shown to be not working away at the best teams. They've been beaten at Leeds, beaten at Brighton, beaten at Huddersfield, and we've still got to go to Sheffield Wednesday, to Norwich. They got hammered at Fulham. So does Stam stick with that system and that philosophy even when it's been proven largely to not work? Or does he have to say, you know, I mean, imagine the playoff semi-final. If we're sitting here talking about a 3-0 defeat, you know, great, Stam stuck to his philosophies and the players have learned, but are we going to be sat there going, why didn't he just park the bus?
His philosophy has got us where we are in the league. Like, whether you're home or away, we are where we are in the league because he's stuck to his guns and played the way he has. So I don't think you can... I mean, you can make an argument. He might be able to tweak it, maybe play two more sitting players with one a bit further forward. You know, you can maybe have Evans and Williams a little bit deeper with Swift a bit further forward, maybe.
That would be where I'd go. Certainly not the actual playing style.
Yeah, I don't think let's abandon this possession thing and up the tempo. I mean, one of the things I wanted to ask about on the counter-attack side of things was Reading play at quite a slow tempo. They sideways passes, move it around. Do you think that they struggle on the counter-attack because that is a sudden... drastic change in tempo to what they're doing, and then suddenly other teams go with a massive high tempo, and Reading are a bit like caught unawares by that because there's a sudden switch.
I've seen the odd good counter goal from Reading's point of view. I mean, look at the goal that won them game against Brentford was a long sort of direct break out. Okay, had a bit of fortune. But and I think the first goal as well might have come from a bit of a quick breakaway as well.
We played it out, but Liam Kelly played it down the line. Wonderful ball. Absolutely wonderful ball. I think there is something to be said. A sudden change in pace catches, you know, certainly catches a team unawares. But then, you know, every team's going to do that, and every team has done that. You know, we are what we are. We play the possession game really quite well now. I think it's just that teams, you know, as soon as teams sniff the opportunity, they'll hassle Harry. They'll win the ball and they'll try and get it forward as quickly as they possibly can, knowing that we're vulnerable at that specific moment. Brighton exploited it with absolute aplomb on Saturday.
Yeah, and going back, I mean, I do tend to agree with the TV. I don't expect or want Yap to abandon those philosophies, but I think I do understand the frustrations of some fans that do say...
I think there's certainly something to be said for having an extra deep-lying midfielder. Well, just provide that extra level of cover in the away games.
Well, let's get into the midfield as well, because this is, again... interested me over the past few weeks, because Stam, and this sort of flows nicely into talking about the January signings and the impact they've had. Well, what is Stam's best central midfield? Because I don't think he knows. We've seen all sorts of combinations. One week, Swift and Kelly are both in the side. The next minute, they're both out of it. One minute, Jordan Mutch is back, then he's not. Then George Evans is in, then he's not. You've got Joey Vandenberg coming back from injury now as well, and Reece Oxford presumably waiting in the wings as well. I mean, what's his best mix? Has Stam possibly now got too much choice and he's not even sure himself?
I think part of the reason that Brighton do so well is they've got a fairly settled side. You know, they've got a settled shape and fairly settled players. And then Reading have a lot of options. I think on the first choice midfield-wise, I would like to see Kelly and Swift both start. And then another. I quite like Evans, but, you know, Williams can do a job there. Or you can bring back Vandenberg and put him in. But I like Swift and Kelly because Swift offers that spark and that attacking goal threat, and then Kelly's got the tenacity and a little bit of the, you know, that you mentioned, the ball he plays.
So there's no place for you then for Jordan Mutch?
No, I mean, I haven't seen, he scored a goal, but other than that, he doesn't really offer any big one characteristic. He's a bit like a lesser Danny Williams or something.
That's exactly what, you know, we canvassed the view of a Crystal Palace fan. I think that was his main criticism. He was like, well, I can't actually tell you what he does. He didn't say necessarily that he was bad, it's just he couldn't pick out a positive attribute. What about Jordan Mutch for you, Dave?
I'm very much in Steve's boat. I'm failing to see what he actually adds that we haven't didn't already have. He's neat, he's tidy, scored a very well taken goal against Ipswich. But, you know, he's certainly not a spectacular player. He's not blessed with any sort of immaculate passing ability. He's not particularly quick, he's not particularly skillful. He is a run-of-the-mill midfielder that adds, you know, nothing really much different to what we've already got.
He's come out and said that he'd like to sign for Reading permanently already. If I wouldn't be happy if Reading did sign him at this point, I just think there are better options out there for the money that Palace are.
I think with Danny Williams likely to go, I think there's a distinct possibility there might be a gap for him come season's end.
Yeah, but I still wouldn't want him starting every week if we're serious about promotion.
I don't like him and Williams in the same midfield. I just don't see it. I just don't like it. I think, go back to what you said, Steve, and what the Palace fan said. What's he really add? I just don't know. And I just get the feeling that Stam doesn't know what his best midfield combo is. And I get the feeling he's now scratching around trying to find it. Is there now too much choice in the squad? Have those five January signings maybe, for now, in the short term, done more harm than good?
I don't think they've done harm. There's no question they were absolutely required. I think Jordan Mutch is certainly... you're starting to question exactly the logic behind it now that we've seen him play. But I don't think it's done any harm to have those options.
It's good to have strength in depth. I think part of the issue we've got is Stam is almost rotating just for the sake of rotating and freshening things up.
I would like to see a settled midfield.
So you'd like to see a settled...
I'm not entirely sure, just going back to your point, I'm not entirely sure of Swift and Kelly in the same midfield. I think it's one or the other for me. I think, you know, loanies aside, the best midfield trio, if we're going to play a midfield three, is Evans, Kelly / Swift. They're much of a muchness for me, and Williams at this moment in time. I don't see much else really. I don't see why Jordan Mutch starts.
What about Joey? Is there a place for Joey?
Squad player.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking about that. You know, as Steve was speaking, I say he's a squad player. Again, he's unspectacular. He's hard nut. But you know, get him on a bad day, and he's a liability.
When he plays, you just know he's going to be one of those substituted. He'll either get a yellow card, or he'll do something stupid, or he won't last the 90. And so it's always, he'll start, but you know he'll come off at some point.
One thing that I'd love to see now, and we talk about this more when we look ahead in AOB, is I'd love to see Grabban and Kermigan get a start together. I don't think they've started in the same game together. Might be wrong.
Wasn't Grabban playing in midfield?
Well, he came on as a midfielder against Barnsley, and that didn't particularly work.
They haven't started together.
But yeah, I'd like to see what they can do, even if it means, unfortunately, and he's, we'll come on to this later, one of the players of the season, even if it means resting McCleary and giving Grabban that wide, because I want to see what the two of them can do combined. I think, individually, they don't seem to thrive. I just want to see what they can do together.
Yeah, I mean, McCleary's kind of playing a weird kind of right winger / second striker kind of role at the moment. And you think Grabban could do that, and he's got the understanding with Kermigan.
Exactly.
So you'd hope that actually it would work, but it's difficult to drop McCleary when he's been so good all season.
Did they play together up front at Ipswich? I'm fairly
sure. No, because Grabban came off the bench, and then they played quite well because they got back in the game when Grabban came on as a sub, I believe.
You do wonder why Stam isn't starting both of them, given their history and their good record together. There's obviously something there, whether that comes back to his philosophy of I only play one up front.
Okay. Or... Well, we'll look at this a bit more in the mailbag as well, but we've got to move on just before we come to looking at the table and where it is. The other comment that I saw, it's in a lot of places, and a lot of people are saying, well, we're not good enough to go up. And to me, that is the most irrelevant question and irrelevant statement out there, because I don't care if you're good enough to go up. If you go up, you go up. Mm. And clearly you've deserved to go up because you've won promotion. Now, would that team get overwhelmed in the Premier League? Yeah, probably. But how do you know what money they're going to spend? How do you know how certain players will step up? Mm. I've seen lots of teams written off when they go up to the Premier League going, oh, record low points total. And then they stay up.
Right in 2005.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, I'm not even going to enter this debate, to be honest with you.
I think the different question is, are we good enough to go up? Obviously, we're fifth or wherever we are. Are we good enough to stay up? You can't say, because you have no idea what's going to happen in the summer with owners and transfers and all that. So it's all irrelevant, really, isn't it?
Okay, well, position-wise, those back-to-back defeats against Huddersfield and Brighton haven't been as damaging, because... fortunately, teams around us continue to slip up. As we record this, Reading are fifth in the table on 60 points with 12 games to go. We are 2 points clear of sixth place Sheffield Wednesday, but all importantly, seven clear of seventh place Fulham. Fulham do have a game in hand, though, so if they win that, the gap will be down to 4 points. Further down, Norwich now 8 points behind us with the same number of games played, as are Preston. Then you've got Barnsley, another 2 points back. Derby County, absolutely imploding. I think they've only won two of their last 10 games. They've slipped right down. They're 12 points behind us now on the same number of games played. The stat I just can't believe when I look at their squad every week and see. Mm. I know, Reading fans are no great fans of Matty Vidra, but they paid £8 million for him and he's barely getting a kick. How do you guys assess this now? After the week's results, are you more concerned? Are you no less concerned? Are you less concerned? Where do you sit? Would you be increasing your stake on Reading to get in the top six, or would you be slowly trying to lay it?
No, I'm still fairly confident based on the position we were two games ago, because two games ago, with 14 games to go, five of the next seven were against Brighton, Newcastle, Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday, and Norwich.
Newcastle, yeah.
After that, we have a very, very tidy run-in, shall we say. We've got a lot of teams in the lower half of the table, particularly at home. I think we've got, six home games left. We've won the vast majority of our home games. I'd be... You look at the amount of points, sort of the mean number of points, which I have done recently.
Yeah, 73 over. Points, I think, is the average that gets you in.
Yeah, yeah. In the modern day playoffs, that's what sixth place has had.
78 is the most you've ever needed.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got to say that you'd be fairly confident. We're not going to lose every single away game. Or, sorry, it's highly unlikely we're not going to lose every single away game. We will pick up points somewhere along the line, away from home. It's eminently feasible that we might win every single home game based on current form. So you've got to be fairly confident that we're still going to pick up the, you know, the 13, 14, 15, 16, however many points it is in the last 12 games from the 36 points that we need to reach the playoffs.
So I'd just ask, it'd be very simple. Are we going to make the playoffs? Steve?
Yes.
Dave?
Yes.
And I also say yes. It's three yeses. We are through to the next round. Right. On that note, we are through to the next phase of this podcast. We'll shuttle on in to News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, we've got a trio of News Bites to get to, starting with congratulations to John Swift. He's been named the EFL Young Player of the Month for January. Why this news took until the end of February to come out, I'm not quite sure, but still, congratulations all the same. He had a very good January coming back from injury. Bagged, I think, three goals in the month. So it did very well, and a couple of very important goals in there as well. So nice him getting more credit from a wider audience. Although not necessarily want him getting too much credit, because if Reading do stay in this division, you don't want too many people circling.
No, he's a key player. You don't want to lose him anytime soon.
No, absolutely not. Right, and the Tarlhurst End Player of the Month vote is still open. Your three contenders are Ali Alhabsi, Tyler Blackett and Jordan Obita. Gents, who would you vote for out of that trio?
I'd go for Tyler Blackett.
Yeah, I think I'll go for Tyler Blackett.
Yeah, I think me as well. I think at the moment Tyler's winning with about 55% of the vote. But again, head over to thetylersn.com to cast your nomination. A really good turnaround for Tyler Blackett as well. We've got a question to him on the mailbag, so I won't spend too long talking about him here. And just interestingly as well, we'll get your thoughts on this one, gentlemen. We ran a poll, another poll on the Tylersn website, a couple of weeks ago now, asking you for your player of the season so far. As you know, your player of the season votes can often be sort of swayed by that late season push. You think of Jordan Obita or Ali Alhabsi in recent years. So I thought it'd be interesting to see how we'd do based on the first two thirds of the season, when hopefully August and September aren't too far out of the rearview mirror. The winner at the moment is one Liam Moore, who actually received less first place votes than Gareth McCleary, but because he got more second and third place votes, he took the title. So Liam Moore wins it. Gareth McCleary is second and Ali Alhabsi third. Two things interested me in this one, guys. Not just that Moore won despite getting less first place votes. I think Moore was still only on two thirds of the ballots. So it means that a third of people voting out there thought that Moore wasn't even in the top three. Now, is that a good thing for you because it means there are loads of worthy contenders, or is your glass half empty thinking no one's been that outstanding?
I'm trying to work out the voting system. Is it alternative vote or something?
It is a top three. So we had eight nominees and you could vote for your top three in order of preference.
Right, okay.
So you could vote first, second or third. If you got a first place vote...
You can tell I haven't voted yet.
Yeah, well, it's too late now. I've done the results. If you came first, you got 5 points. If you came second, you get 3 points. A third place vote is worth 1 point. So that's how we did it.
Okay.
So, yeah. All so right. You didn't have to have everybody on the ballot. So you're going to pick your top three. So anyway, the question, glass half empty or glass half full? Is it that there's so much good talent out there, or is it there's no outstanding people having outstanding seasons?
I think I'm half full. I think there are a lot of players that are playing really well, especially when you compare to the previous two seasons we've had. I think a lot of people are going to see this team is playing really well with a lot of good players.
Dave?
I think, yeah, I'm with that. There are a number of players who have had exceptional seasons. Gareth McCleary, obviously the main case in point. Liam Moore has been a bit of a revelation since he signed. As I just say, again, kudos to the club for persisting with him. You know, Ali Alhabsi, it's almost fairly standard that he's going to be up there now. For all his obvious weaknesses, the guy is always one of the top performers throughout the season.
Is that top three the same way you'd vote? A lot of people are saying Paul McShane should probably get a nod over Moore.
I think you could argue Paul McShane, Liam Kelly.
Kelly was fourth.
There we go. I think it's hard to argue against that top three.
I agree with the top three, and I think it's easy to forget how poor defensively we were before Liam Moore join the club.
Yeah.
You know, right at the start of the season, not good. He joins, things look a little bit better.
We've not even mentioned John Swift yet.
John Swift, I think, was tied with Paul McShane for 5th and 6th, I think. With the Jan Kermigant was 5th, and I think Swift and McShane were 6th and 7th, well, joint 6th. Then Callum Harriott rounded out the top 8.
You can see why half full rather than half empty.
Yeah, lots. I was quite surprised to see Jan Kermigant so high. But I think maybe that had been the recency of when the poll opened, because I think he'd had a few good weeks there. Do you think that will change? Is there anyone that you can see busting into that top 3? Any dark horses?
No.
Swift is the one for me, and I know Johnny Williams will thank me for saying that. I could definitely see John Swift bursting in there if he has a good end to the campaign, because he certainly started the season well.
I think you could certainly look at look at Liam Kelly. If he's given a consistent, which he has been, a consistent starter over the last, and if he continues to develop the way that he is, then there's no question that he will certainly be knocking on that door.
Okay, well, we will. As I said, we will run a full season vote at the end of the season. Hopefully, you know, when we're still hungover from those Wembley celebrations, and we'll also have a Rookie of the Year vote as usual as well. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for everyone who voted. In the meantime, we'll move on to a very rare pub chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Okay, chaps, I thought it was time to bust out the pub chat, dust it down, because we had a good question in from RSC Fan Abroad. He sent us in an email asking us to pick our Reading FC Academy 11. So that's players who've come through Reading's Academy and represented the first team. He's put forward his team. Starts with Alex McCarthy in goal. You've got Jake Cooper, Michael Hector and Alex Pearce. Tenai Watson and Jordan Abita. Then you've got Jem Karachan, Liam Kelly and Aaron Tischboller, with Gylfi Sigurdsson and Darius Henderson providing the muscle up top. And he's got a bench of Ben Hamer, Curtis Asano, Nathan Tyson, Hal Robson-Kanu, James Henry, Simon Church and Simon Cox. I'll go for my team first, just because it's written in front of me. Largely the same names, it must be said. I've gone for McCarthy, Abita, Hector Pearce. I've been slightly sneaky and stuck Jem Karachan at right back. Hal Robson-Kanu, Jem Karachan, Liam Kelly, James Henry, and then Gylfi Sigurdsson behind Simon Cox.
Yeah, I think we're both pretty similar. So in goal, I'd have McCarthy, and then at right back, I'd have Watson, because he's, you know, natural right back, and I'm not picking Julian Kelly. Hector and Pearce at centre back, Obita left back, and then I'd have Kelly and Karachan in the centre midfield too. Sig behind Cox, and then Robson-Kanu and Henry on the wings.
Very nice. Dave?
Yeah, you've got to go with Alex McCarthy. It's fairly clear in goal. Jordan Obita, I put at left back. Played most of his professional football there. HRK on the left wing.
Okay.
I would have a front pairing of Sigurdsson just behind Darius Henderson, just to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
I think Henderson has played at more levels than the other players, and been a little bit more. All right, he had a fairly poor season at Watford, but certainly scored more goals, I think. In the middle, Karachan. I'm struggling here for a right back, so I'm just going to go with Tenai Watson.
Angus McDonald, should you go for? Don't mind a Barnsley now.
So fair.
Adam Lockwood.
Centre back, though, isn't he? Karachan, alongside Karachan. Yeah, this is a bit of a tough one. For
Kelly?
Me, I think. You can't really look for that.
Aaron Cool.
Not going to have
Scott Davis. Ryan Edwards.
there's a few names, aren't there? You can't look for it's got to be Liam Kelly, I think. Yeah, simply because the way that he stormed onto the scene, he doesn't look out of place from absolutely nowhere at this moment in time. And on the right wing, James Henry.
Yeah. Oh, I mentioned Ryan Edwards there and a couple of other names. It's nice to see that a few Academy products that you maybe thought, they've not got what it takes, have bounced back. He's doing really well up with, I think, Partick, isn't he? Where I think Niall Keown's gone up on loan. He's doing quite well there, is Ryan. And as mentioned, Adam Lockwood made a good career after getting released by Reading. And Angus McDonald as well went all the way down to the conference with Torquay and is now back in the Championship as well with Barnsley. So there's a few that have bounced back. Obviously, those that haven't made it, your Scott Davies of the world, your Julian Kelly. Mm-hmm. I remember putting in a really good performance against Wolves, Dave, in a 1-0 win, and then just sort of disappeared from the scene.
Yes, yeah, the 1-0 win in January. I think, was that our last home win under Steve Coppell? I think it might have been.
Yeah, it was one of the last anyway.
Yeah, it was certainly the penultimate win at home in the league that calendar year, and that was at the end of January.
Should have an honourable mention for Simon Church.
Yes, yeah, well, we certainly had one of the more impressive maiden seasons of any Academy product as well. And good goalkeepers as well. You know, Ben Hamer's played in the Champions League.
Mm. Does Federici not count?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just thought I'd raise it because I'm sure there might be some listeners at home raging that none of us have picked him.
Yeah, it does go to show, though, you know, we mentioned all these names over the years and, you know, you'll hear it in the interview we do with Lee Heron that's going to come out in a few weeks' time. You know, the amount of people that come through that academy, there's only so many spaces. And, you know, you're talking about a Reading academy that's been fairly successful compared to others. And, yeah, there's still, unfortunately, some people just don't make it. And, you know, is Dom, you know, the fact that Dom Samuel's not getting in any of our teams goes to show just how tricky it can be. So anyway, if you've got your Academy 11, why not send them in to us, thetilehurstend@gmail.com. You can tweet us at thetilehurstend or leave them on the Facebook page at facebook.com/tilehurstend. And thank you very much to RFC Fan Abroad for suggesting the topic. If you've got a topic you'd like to suggest, by all means, go and suggest it. If you contribute to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/tilehurstend and you commit, you are automatically entitled to a pub chat topic. So that's a way to certainly get your topic discussed by this esteemed panel. Head over to patreon.com/tilehurstend. That's patreon.com/tilehurstend. You know, David White has stepped up to the plate this week. He's put his money where his mouth is. He recognises what we're doing here and goes, you know what? I'm going to put that scratch down. Hand over that cheese. Give them something extra. So thank you very much, David, and to everyone who continues to support us. Speaking of support, this next segment definitely wouldn't be going ahead without you. It is the mailbag.
The Tilehurst End Podcast. Read the blog on thetilehurstend.com.
Mr. Alan West always jokes that as soon as Reading lose, the mailbag bulges. And that has never been more true than today's show. I've got two pages of A4 full of mailbag feedback, and we do welcome it all. It's very much welcome. We do our best to get as much on as possible, but I'm going to rattle through a lot of these at once because they're mostly covering the Brighton game. I'll start with Clive Ratton. He says, watched the game on TV and thought we did okay. Brighton were better, just please no hysteria, it's a work in progress. Daniel says, don't mind failing badly, Arsenal, United, Fulham, etc., as long as we show we've learned from it. Alex Everson says, expecting you to get a barrage of negativity, so let's just get it into context. We got outclassed. Not a case of us being spineless or gutless, Brighton are simply a better side. Don't get me wrong, we didn't play well, but the way people jump on the negativity straight away is just so OTT. Keep it in context. Samuel says, 8-hour journey for me in total, so obviously gutted, but it was just one of those days where we just didn't click. I just hope this doesn't mark the start of any sort of collapse. Andy the Bear says, only thing I could say is I wish the fans had more patience. Yes, we need work, but we have come a long way. Daniel Osmond says, we were well beaten by a better team. Brighton exposed an obvious formula that any team in the division can use to beat us. And Jack Killick has written us an email. He says, I don't think we played too bad against Brighton, just failed to create a huge amount of chances and gave them goals way too easily. One player I was disappointed with was Behrens. Too many times got into good positions and failed to pick players out, instead just playing it to a Brighton player. Reading as a whole need to be more clinical. You look at just before Brighton's first and second goals, we had great chances to score through Williams and Behrens. Then Brighton just easily stroll forward and score. However, I still feel positive and looking forward to the next two home games. You ours. Dave, you were full of praise but you certainly gave him some credit, Roy Behrens. Anything in Jack's email there that particularly wrangles you?
Doesn't wrangle, because he can be a frustrating character, a frustrating player, because sometimes his final ball isn't quite up there. And I do recall there was one particular pullback to the edge of the area, which ended up going to nowhere, but it was a wonderful pullback, and all it needed was one player running onto that and smacking it to goal, because Brighton had left that area completely isolated. He obviously had the shot on goal in the first half, which I mentioned, the shot on goal in the second half. He does get into some wonderful positions. You know, I urge anybody, when he plays, just watch his movement. He is an extremely intelligent footballer, playing out wide. His movement, bearing in mind he's only got, you know, one side to work in, so to speak, for the majority of the time, is exceptional. It doesn't always come off, doesn't always receive the ball, but his movement is really good. I'd urge anybody to watch him.
Well, the only thing that frustrated me about his point, because I thought he had a good game as well, was that moment where he gets to the byline and then just crosses into empty space where there's nobody.
Mm-hmm.
That was
at 0-0, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's almost on the Matijovski argument.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It was like, is Behrens the new Matijovski? He's too clever.
He kind of just expects someone to be there.
Yeah. That's what the point that I thought didn't make at that on that specific instance was just a quick look up.
Yeah.
Just a very brief glance into that area, and then you immediately have a change of mind. Simple, really.
Yeah. Matt Everson says, how worried are you that we might not make the playoffs? Well, we've discussed that. We're all still there. What percentage would you give it, though? You've said we'll all make it. What percentage would you say of making the playoffs?
80%.
80%, Dave?
Slightly less, 75.
I think I'm about the 75% mark as well. But yeah, still very, very confident. George H. Bone says, leaving each home game this season, I'm left feeling we did not go for the kill. Am I alone? Is this a bad thing?
You're not alone. It's not necessarily a bad thing, provided we're winning. Everybody wants to see your team, you know, go for the jugular all the time, but it's not always, you know, not always going to reap results.
They've only got the quality to do it.
Yes, they have. They clearly have, because we're capable of creating chances and scoring goals. Everybody wants to see a team, you know, once you get two, three goals up, absolutely annihilate a side. You know, it's likely to happen. But the thing is, it's a 46 game season.
Well, and hold on a second, though, Dave. I would just like to see Reading get two up. Because they don't even seem to do that. How often have we been two up this season?
Come back to me on that one.
I think, you know, this might be the side to Sam that is more pragmatic, is he sees we've got the lead. If we keep the ball, then we're not going to concede. So that might be why, you know, we're not going for the kill, is that's his pragmatic side coming out, is we've got the lead, we've got 3 points. If we keep this, then we're right. Whereas if we go for the kill, we leave ourselves more exposed at the back, and then we might concede, and then you have to start all over again. So
there was an opinion piece written by the Inspector, and again, we very much encourage you, if you've got an opinion piece, if you've got something that's, you know, bugging you and you want to get it out there to an audience, please send us in, you know, go to thetylersend@gmail.com, drop us an email. We're very much here for everyone to get their opinions out. We're not censoring opinions. We're not only putting out one agenda. If you've got thoughts, get in touch. But he has done just that. He's put out his opinion piece this week about taking his young grandchildren to the Amex to watch Reading. And, you know, they're on the fence. They're not proper football fans yet. And he was just talking about how they weren't really entertained by watching Reading. It's, Dave, I know me and you have talked about this in previous podcasts, mm-hmm. about the entertainment factor. So we won't go into that again. But, Steve, I'd like to get your thoughts on it, because we haven't had you this season.
Yeah.
Are you entertained often watching Reading?
Do you know what? I am, but not for the whole game. It ebbs and flows. There are times when it's like, oh, okay, come on, you've had it at the back now for like 5 minutes, go forward a bit. But then there are times where you're just dominating possession, you're in their third, you're seeking things out, and it might be slow, and it might not be, oh, shots on goal every 30 seconds, but you can see they're trying to find space and find something. It's not like pointless possession. Yeah. It's just, there's something to it. It's just a little less gung-ho and in your face, but it can still appreciate it.
Okay. Matt says, as Brian Tavraden says, it's a 3-year project, so some perspective needed from fans, especially given the last two seasons. And to be a tad negative, I've been very disappointed with the impact of Much and Graben. McCleary also. He looks uninterested at times, and the players seem frustrated by that. Hope Stam drops him to show there is serious competition and that his starting place isn't guaranteed. Perhaps that's harsh, but his performance has been slipping. I don't think you can argue with if Gareth finds himself on the bench based on the last two games on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned earlier you could drop McCleary and bring in Graben and then restore the Graben and Kermigan partnership.
Do you think it's a case of looking uninterested, Dave, or do you think he's just been...
No, I think he's a marked man. He's been our most creative and successful attacking outlet this season. He's our top scorer.
Second in player of the season votes.
He's got a high number of assists, and he creates chances. You know, give him the ball in the right areas, he creates chances. But when teams actually, you know, identify where he's receiving the ball, which Huddersfield and Brighton clearly did, and defend those areas, it becomes less effective. It's not a case of being uninterested. It's just being a case of not being able to affect the game in the manner that his manager would want him to.
Alex asks, does our slow tempo sometimes hinder us when attacking? We only really attack when we're on the counter, which itself is rare. Steve?
Yes. Well, you can argue that that's the case. I mean, you keep possession better when you slow the tempo, which is what Stan wants, and you can make sure you keep the ball and don't concede. But I think, you know, if we're slow in the build-up, then it's difficult to find space because everyone just sits back and gets two banks of four and then hit us on the break. So you would like to see some tempo switches from time to time.
Dave, a question for you. John Beck asks, have the supporters just realised that Danny Williams really does flatter to deceive, neither an enforcer or a creator in midfield?
Well, I thought someone with a name like John Beck would absolutely love a 100% on 100 mile an hour midfielder.
For Mikel Beck.
He does at times, but you can't. He's a hassler. He's a harrier. And that's sometimes you just need that in a game. And he does offer that that sort of snappy bulldog type sort of personality and that kind of style of play to it. He's that kind of player. Neither an enforcer or a he's certainly not a creator. We know he's not a creator. But he's a facilitator. You know, he'll pick up the ball and he'll try and make a driving run, all too often into the middle of nowhere, which is infuriating at times when you're thinking there's an opportunity to pass it and he's missed it. But sometimes, you know, he picks up the ball and he does like to play it, you know, in the midfield. You know, he'll pick it up. He's not scared to pick it up in tight spaces and try and work it in and around that area. But you know he'll never be that sort of true Roy Keane type enforcer. But then again, he'll never be that sort of David Beckham type creator.
He's still Sidwell light for me.
Yes, yeah, I tend to agree. Sidwell showed how that central midfield role with that type of player showed how alongside Dale Stevens, you know, they're two very similar players, and they complement each other extremely well.
Yeah, and just a couple of more to finish off. I'll start with Stephen Bowler. He sent us quite a long email, and he submitted that it might be a bit too long for the podcast. Unfortunately, it is. You know, we love getting all these emails in, but you know, if they go over sort of a couple of paragraphs, that we find it hard. But basically, he wants to take he's taking aim at some of the boo boys that have surfaced on social media platforms over the last couple of weeks. He's sort of asking people to, you know, try and be supporters. These last couple of lines are, the fickleness of some current fans reminds me of the 80s, where there are more Spurs, Chelsea, Man United shirts on the South Bank than there were Reading shirts. I love Reading, the only team I have ever and will ever support. Yes, I get just as annoyed when we lose, but people really need to be true supporters. And that is in all caps with an exclamation mark. Again, thank you very much for the feedback, Steve. Apologies if you can't get the full email on. Steve, what about you here? First of all, do you think there are a lot of boo boys, or do you just think it's a very vocal minority?
I think it's a very vocal minority that's actually exacerbated by Twitter. You know, I mean, it's probably very few people, but they tweet on all the time and get loads of retweets.
Social media gives people an immediate voice, doesn't it? I avoid Twitter the day after, you know, for a full day after the game. I don't use it very often, but I'm a lurker, as it were.
You, of course, use it to follow at the Tarlhurst End.
Of course. And you may find that I've retweeted a few of your tweets.
Oh, there you go. Our tweets, Dave, you're part of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't actually sort of look at Twitter or rarely look at Twitter after a game, be it win, lose or draw. I think
fans are fickle.
Yes, they are. They're also very emotional beasts. And I think it's unwise sometimes to post in the heat of the moment. I think it's better to take a step back, bit of perspective, and then go back a little bit later. I think with regards to the actual supporters themselves, you know, as a collective, I think yeah, every side's going to have its dissenters. Let's face it. I certainly have one behind me in the Norwich game in the Eamon Dolan stand. I remember we were 2-1 up and we got the ball in the 90th minute, got the ball down in the right back area, worked it back to the just kept possession, worked it back to the back four and passed it around. This guy got up, little bit of a shout and a swear and walked out in frustration. 30 seconds later, we scored.
I've got a bloke who sits forward and to the right of me that just shouts, "Rally, get it forward." And just like get so frustrated before Reading have even lost the ball.
Yeah. I think this ties into the tweet earlier from, was it Andy the Bear or something like that? He says, "I wish fans had more patience." I do very much agree with that. I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to be a short term. It's certainly not going to be a short term fix, shall we say. Because Reading fans are traditional British football fans brought up on a diet of 4-4-2, direct, fast-paced, 100-mile-an-hour football. We're not playing that now. And we're not going to play that now. I think fans have... They're not warmed to it, so to speak. I think they've accepted it, on the whole. Let's just give it 2-3 seasons and see what happens. It can happen. It can absolutely happen. Take a look at Swansea.
Well, absolutely.
I mean, you give it a little period of time and fans will, I think they'll eventually become proud of the way we play. You know, you look at Swansea when they were going up, their fans were loving it. Oh, look, we dominate the ball. We're passing it so nicely. You can't do that. And it's like, if you give it a couple of seasons of us playing like this, I'm sure Reading fans will actually start to be proud of the way we play.
Yeah, exactly. And you take a look at the Swansea point, is something I was actually thinking about this on Saturday night. You take a look at Swansea and the way they play. We played Swansea in September 2008. We'd just gone down from the Premier League, effectively an established Championship club playing at the top end of that division. Swansea played us. They had a little bit more background to their whole style of play, but they played against us. You know, side featuring Leon Britton, side featuring Yordi Gomez, and amongst others. And we wiped the floor with them 4-0, having had about 35-40% possession. Brighton have effectively done that to us at the weekend. Not quite so bad, 3-0. We'll take 3-0 over 4-0 any day of the week.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a comparison there. And look at Swansea now. All right. They're fighting relegation. They've had a couple of struggling seasons, but you know they still play the same way. They have that ingrained in their psyche now.
It's their identity.
Exactly.
Penultimate tweet comes from Hugh. Is Tyler Blackett really deserving of the praise recently? Feels like he's being measured only against himself and not against how he performs relative to the rest of the team. Still a constant liability, in my view.
A little bit harsh.
Yeah.
There's a problem with him, and we've said this before, is that he's neither a dedicated centre-back and he's or a dedicated full-back. I think he's ideally suited to back three, left side of a back three, and putting in cover for the... wing back.
That's where Louis van Gaal brought him in for the United team when they were playing that back three.
Yeah,
thought he was magnificent against Barnsley. I thought everything I wanted a defender to be.
Yes,
I thought Blackett was on that day.
He struggled the game after though, didn't he?
Brentford.
And the reason for that, totally different side, totally different makeup. Brentford were exceptional. Their passing and moving right up close. I sat in the first half, right up close towards the front. You know, you watch just the little tricks, flicks, and the amount of times they met some of our players with their little tricks and flicks is unreal.
Yeah.
They were exceptional. Any defender's going to struggle against that. I think Tyler Blackett is one that would struggle just that little bit more.
Just quickly then, Steve, do you think he's been good compared to overall defensive standards or just good compared to Blackett standards?
I think he's been good overall. Obviously, it might be bumped up a bit by comparison to earlier performances, but in general the past few games he's actually had a very good general defensive
performance. It looks like he's going to win player of the month, so quite a few people seem to think so. But anyway, thank you very much for all the feedback. I'll end the mailbag with Roller Bob, who asks, is Wolves a must win? If we lose, we'll have lost three in a row going into Newcastle, Preston, Sheffield Wednesday and Leeds. Ouch. We'll answer that in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
So as Roller Bob mentioned, the next game is Wolves. Let's get right to it. Gents, must win game, yes or no?
Every game is must win.
Especially if you want the playoffs. But yeah, I would say so. After these most recent two performances, you need to just bounce back. You need to show that you've got the bounce back ability to, you know, come back and make sure you do actually stay in the playoffs.
Without the cliche.
If there is a team to play at the moment, you would pick Wolves because they've been in miserable form recently. They've lost their last four. They got beat at home 2-1 by Birmingham, who couldn't even buy a win under Gianfranco Zola. I think they had won, 1-11, 1-12 games.
And they played again. Yes, something like that. They played 40 minutes or so with 10 men, didn't they, Wolves? Birmingham.
You look at that team as well, Dave, and It's pretty unrecognisable. I thought I had a good idea of what Wolves' team was. But I look at that and I don't recognise after that. I mean, you got a couple of mainstays and Akimi and Dave Edwards and Stearman. But apart from that, it's a lot of unknown names. Price.
There's a few players in there who have been there for a few years. You know, look at Danny Bath, George Saville, Andy Vyman has been around the block a few, even though he's quite a young. David Edwards. The recognised championship names.
Costa's a £10 million player, isn't he?
13.
13, was it?
Allegedly. £13 million player. Exactly.
That was going to be my point, is you look at that team and the only actual standout star quality player they've got is Costa, who they only signed in January, albeit, you know, from loan. But they should be a team that Reading should beat, because Reading, you'd think, have better quality than them.
They're certainly not famous last words. There's not a lot to fear automatically in that team, but you know, they did beat us 2-0 earlier in the season
very comfortably. But at the same time, just thinking about this, they high pressed. They did it with it when we were very, very young in our development, and we are now developing a much better reaction to that particular high press. And I think that it's going to be a very I hope it's going to be a very different kettle of fish this time around.
Well, the bookmakers have got Reading 5-4 favourites. The draw is 23-10, and Wolves are just about better than 2-1. They are 11-5 for this one. You know, they're down in, I think, 20th in the table as well. So they're not safe from relegation by any stretch of the imagination. They're going to need to win this. I know you're both really disappointed that we're not going to get Ciola John. He didn't last more than half the season there.
That's sad.
Yeah, real shame.
He's been subloaned, hasn't he?
He's been subloaned, yeah. Deportivo, is it?
I'm not sure, I don't know.
Anyway, someone that's going to pay him an extraordinary amount of money to sit in the treatment room. Prediction league-wise, it's all very, very tight. Johnny Williams is top on 30 points. Then it's myself, Dave and Charles all tied on 27 in second place. Westy propping up the rear on 21. Dave, do you want to go first or after me this week?
I'll go after you.
Okay, I'm going to say Reading are going to win this 2-0.
I'll go 3-1.
3-1 to Reading?
To Reading, yeah.
Steve, not in the prediction league, but you know, we like to get an honorary prediction.
Yeah.
So you come and boast next time you're back.
I'm going to go for 3-0. Okay. I'm just confident. Famous last words. They're going to come back and bite me now, but...
Very, very much hope you're right. Well, we're hopefully going to get another show away before the Newcastle game with myself, Westy and Johnny, just before that Newcastle game on the Tuesday, so I won't get your thoughts for that. But, well, I will, just because you're here, and you probably won't be on that show. Not because I don't like you, but because I know the time won't suit either of you. So what do you think for that Newcastle game? Is this a game Reading should be, you know, hoping for a point, or should they be thinking, you know what, they're here for the taking?
I think I'm more confident of getting something against Newcastle than I was against Brighton, put it that way.
Okay, Steve?
To be honest, I wouldn't mind if we lost. I'm kind of going into it going, do you know what?
Bonus game.
Yeah, bonus game.
Okay. Well, I said a very tricky run as highlighted there by Roller Bob. Vicious fixtures coming up with Preston, Sheffield Wednesday, Leeds. Not pretty. So, you know, you do need those 3 points on the board for me. Get up to 63 points, nudge towards that line, and give yourself a bit of breathing room. Because you don't, even though we have got, as you said, Dave, a fairly soft run in, you don't want to be going into those games with must win.
No,
all over.
No, and this, the point that I didn't make earlier is, we don't want to be chasing. We want to be leading.
Mm, exactly. Anyway, we will see how that goes. As mentioned, I'll hopefully be back with the guys on Monday to preview that Newcastle game and look back on the Wolves fixture as well. As mentioned, we've got the Lee Heron interview coming up in the next few weeks as well. DJ Mega Party is on the horizon as well. That interview is nestling in the can for an off week. So hopefully a few more interviews in the future as well. We're going to try and line those up. Again, huge thank you to everyone who contributes to patreon.com/TileHurstEnd. It makes such a massive difference, you know, come back after a long day at work and then, you know, set up a studio, record a podcast, edit a podcast, and then go straight to bed. Having a few quid on the table does make that process that little bit easier. So thank you to those of you who have done so. And I said it helps funds the very things you're hearing us through, these hearty little microphones that have done us so well. Anyway, that wraps up. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
No worries. 6 times, by the way.
6 times what?
We've taken a 2-0 lead.
Oh, that's not a lot from 33 games.
Nope.
There you go.
We did take a 3-1 lead against Norwich, though, didn't we?
Makes my 3-0 look positively out there.
It was back-to-back 3-0 wins. I think that was it, wasn't it, all season? So there we go. Anyway, like the optimism. Hopefully someone's going to predict a draw or a defeat, though, because there's only one result that usually ends up when we all predict wins. So hopefully Johnny, Westy or Charles will predict a defeat. Anyway, as I said, that does us. We'll see you next week. And in the meantime, go on, you Ars. We'll
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.